Welcome. Welcome, curious souls, to the Macabre Emporium, your sanctuary for the unusual, the mysterious, and the appalling.
Step through our cryptic doorway into a world where secrets whisper and enigmas come to life.
I'm David.
And I'm Sarah.
Together, we're your custodians of the macabre, guiding you through tales that defy the ordinary.
Discover the untold stories, from lesser-known cases of true crime to the bizarre events that captivate us.
Join us on a journey to the shadows where the mainstream fades and the extraordinary beckons.
So whether you seek the bizarre, the eerie, or the chillingly obscure,
you're in for a treat here at Macabre Emporium.
Welcome back to Macabre Emporium. This is episode 92.
And if this is your first time joining us because you lurked and watched us build Legos on Twitch, welcome.
Welcome. I don't know. I was going to say something. I don't even know. So you can cut that out.
So, yeah. Like I said, welcome if you saw us build Legos on Twitch, which happened to be Sarah's first time ever in her life, apparently, building Legos.
It was.
So how was your whole Lego building experience from that, the over 2,000
never doing
pieces?
It. Yeah. It went way quicker than I thought it was going to. Right. But I had a lot of fun doing it.
Right.
Ready for the next one.
All right. So she said the next one, we're going to get that big-ass Titanic set,
no,
which
we're
is
not.
Like over like 9,000 pieces.
I have no want in my life for the Titanic set. The Hocus Pocus set, yes.
Honestly, I think the Titanic one would be a little much because it's just all red, white, and black for the most part, even though it's all separate sections.
I have
you can see
no
into the ship interiors and whatnot. I know you don't. I keep joking about it.
Yeah.
But if you guys want to crowdfund that for us, maybe she might change her mind.
I won't.
I'm just kidding.
Don't waste your money.
Yeah. Don't spend your money on us like that.
But if you want to waste your money on us like that.
Yeah, but if you do, we do have a smaller option, more affordable option, the Hocus Pocus set.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the one kit that I would really like to get, I'm not going to get my hands on.
I was flipping through the TikToks, and I found this guy. I think his name was like Fun Funeral Facts or something.
But did he say it like Fun Facts?
No.
Well, then they're not that fun.
But he had brought out these, it's a German brand, but they're actually Legos, but it doesn't say Lego on the box, but they're actually Lego bricks inside the box, but they're like funeral sets. So there's like a horse-drawn hearse and a crematorium.
Well, maybe you might have to look into that.
Yeah.
But the thing is, they can't be Lego blocks because
they say they are Lego blocks.
So is it the red square with white lettering on it?
Mm-hmm.
So they probably are actual Lego sets. It's just
I'll have
German
to show you.
Spelling of it.
I'll have no. It doesn't say Lego anywhere on the actual
then they're
box
not
product.
Lego because
the blocks inside.
Hold on. Because actual legitimate Lego blocks are designed not to fit with anything else. Even if somebody tries and copy it, they won't because there's patent piece. There's you know, secret patent stuff of actual Lego bricks, they will not attach to anything else correctly.
I'll have to show you.
Okay.
But it's cool because it's like four or five different boxes of like funeral stuff.
Okay. So maybe we'll have to find those next because that fits more for us apparently.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to have more room in the coffin for Legos because that case took up an entire shelf on its own.
It did. We'll just have to get shelves for the walls.
Yeah. But anyways.
Moving on.
She might be getting Legos just for herself here soon, maybe.
Yeah.
Because she said she wants to get the plant one so we can have plants here. So Mr. Sticky Beans, Legosi, that always hangs out here with us in the office when we record, doesn't eat the plants. And if he knocks them off, it's okay. He can snap them back together.
I'm more worried about Ginger. That bitch took off with a whole plant under her bed.
True. But it not being an actual plant, putting off any kind of scent for them to be attracted to it.
True that.
Then again, that bitch does chew plastic.
She does. And they so does all, well, they all do at some point.
Her and Legosi are the worst at it, especially Legosi's idiot self.
He likes the sticky plastic.
Yeah, so I was about to say, he's obsessed with like the sticky plastic you peel off of like new TVs or computer monitors or the film on a brand new phone you get, you know, on the screen.
Or tape.
Yeah, if it's got a sticky surface to it, he's obsessed with it. Like I've like I keep a little trash can by, you know, my desk, and I had, I don't remember what it was I even bought, but it was that little sticky crap on the back side of it, and it was hanging out of the top of the trash can, and he kept trying to get it. I literally had to empty my trash can to get him to stop messing with it.
You know what else I noticed he likes, which is completely on brand for him?
What?
Like, you know when you get an advertisement for a store that has the cards that are stuck on with the little booger type shit on the back?
That you can roll off?
He loves that.
That sticky stuff or the paper?
The sticky stuff. I don't know if it's a certain smell in the sticky that he likes.
I don't know.
Sticky bitch. His paws are sticky. Butthole sticky.
Not his butthole's not sticky. It's stinky.
Stinky. Okay, way off topic.
Yeah. So we might be doing more Lego sets in the future. When we do, we'll let you guys know, and you can come watch and
yep,
whatnot. But we're also going to start playing more games together on Twitch probably or two. And we're probably going to start doing, it might have a dedicated day, is Farm Friday. Because this week of this recording... Oh. Sarah decided to start playing Farm Simulator 25 with me, which I never thought I'd see her do.
That's what you get for thinking.
I know. And it was kind of funny at first because the first thing, like, a vehicle I put her in was a harvester, which doesn't steer from the front like she would be used to. It steers from the back.
Uh-huh.
Like, if, you know, so she was not aware of the front end swing of that because I didn't think to tell her, hey, the rear end's going to swing out first before the front. So that was... amusing for me to watch. And
well, once I slowed down, I did fine.
Right.
Cleared the stop sign you thought I was going to smash into.
Right. And she's driving like a pro, too. Also, she's keeping lines straight, running the harvester and planters and whatnot. And she's like all nervous, thinking I'm going to be like super toxic community about her missing spots. I'm like, I don't care. It's not a real farm. I'm not worried about it.
If it was a real farm, would have got my ass whooped, I'm sure.
If it was a real friend, they wouldn't have bothered with going back over their spots. They would have just been bare spots. But I know there are some players that do that, and I'm super excited to show her some other stuff, too.
I mean, I'm super excited for the goats.
Yeah, but
I want them real bad.
Even though we started to save, I realized I made the mistake of not starting a single-player save, starting with equipment, and then loading it into multiplayer.
But we weren't doing that. We're starting literally from scratch.
Right. I know.
So quit thinking that.
Well, the funny thing is, if I was to return plot number one that has like the barn and the house on and all that, we have to literally destroy all that first before I can return it for money.
But we're not doing that. So
I know. We're not going to. It is kind of funny to see because she dressed her avatar up. As she normally dresses in like
black,
a hoodie and leggings basically. And I put mine in a suit and she didn't get it at first till I explained it to her. It's my dark humor coming out. It's my Andrew Kehoe outfit. And then she kind of giggled. And then when she realized that's why what I was going for, it like connected to, you know, in her brain because she's like, oh yeah, he was a farmer.
And what I say, I say it a lot. That's fucked and funny.
Right. You know what we mean. You guys get our dark humor.
Hopefully, if they've been around this long.
Right. If you've been listening to 92 episodes by now, you know we find humor in things that we're not supposed to.
Well over 100 with all the
92-ish with the non-numbered episodes.
Yeah. I feel like we're due for a clear and spin episode.
Maybe. We also got to figure out what we're going to do for episode 100. Get that big milestone coming.
That's crazy.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, that's still a long ways away.
Topic for discussion.
Since we're back on to every other week like we had, and I don't know if we're going to continue on with this, but because I know I've found it easier for me.
Mm-hmm. It's nice to have more time to like read. I've read a few books and that's been nice.
Right.
Instead of only getting to read little bits here and there. Like I finished a whole ass book this weekend.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Me time has been nice.
Yep.
Being able to play something with you again has been nice. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. And with summer coming up, you know, hopefully be able to get out of the house more often.
Right. Because we got the concert. I got some new ghost gear also since the last episode for whenever we find another paranormal investigation and go to. I got a little GoPro camera. It's called the Phasm Cam from GhostStop.com. And, you know, yeah, I'm going to tell you where I got it. It's not a plug for them. They didn't pay me for it unless they want to pay me in free stuff like the Boo Bear.
Like the keychain that you were supposed to get, but it fell out of the box because the box had a hole in it.
Yeah.
No fault of Ghost Ops.
Right.
Definitely the USPS. But
it's damn government's fault.
Yeah.
I got the Faz Cam from Ghost.com. It's just like, it's, I'm pretty sure it's just their model, their branded GoPro. They gutted GoPros, added their own little things to it in their own casing. The infrared light that's on it that I showed you for like 3 seconds before the battery died in the bathroom when I told you to shut the door.
Yeah. When you were rushing, shut the door, shut the door.
Yeah, because I didn't know how long that battery was going to last. It didn't last
long enough for you to show me the toilet and the wall and it was done.
Yeah, that was it. Like that, and I turned off the IR light, infrared light on it, it's just so she can actually see the difference, and then it died.
Uh-huh.
And then I got the Faz light that goes along with that to make areas brighter in the same light spectrums and also other light spectrums too. As well, I asked what the really cool thing that I got was the Tracer 2.
Really cool.
What the Tracer 2 is, it's an 8.5-foot LED strip that connects to a box that has motion sensors and temperature sensor in it as well, too. And it can actually judge the distance where something is along the tracer wire, and it'll light up. And if it moves towards the sensor or away from the sensor, and it'll track it down the LED strip, and it also changes to the color purple if it detects a degree temperature of 2 degrees.
A degree difference.
Yep.
Yeah.
So one really cool, you know, place that would probably be a good place to use that at is maybe the Bell Mansion if we can get in there sometime.
Mm-hmm.
Because in Robert's room, because some of the other videos I watched out of curiosity to see what other people discovered there, that in Robert's room, the bedroom, if you remember, has that in-link carpet.
Yeah.
To put it across there, because a lot of the other investigation groups that got in there, they've heard the plastic rustle, and the staff also had said that the plastic cover, they've heard something like as someone walked across it. So I think that'd be a really good spot to try that thing out at.
That room gave me the heebie-jeebs.
Yeah, and like I said, also he didn't want me in there, so maybe I put it across there, and I put myself on one side of the room. I know you're going to stay by the door to see if he walks across it to come at me.
Yeah. If he comes at you, love you, but I'm Audi 5000.
I'll be fine. I just won't stand by the window so he can't push me on it.
Probably a good idea, because that was the second floor. Yeah. I didn't go up to the third floor.
No. That when we were there for that investigation, you would have been miserable up that third floor.
I know, because you came down sweating and it was really hard to breathe up there.
Yeah.
Yeah, my asthma.
Well, that's also because they turned the AC off and everybody was upstairs on the third floor by the end of the night. And
it was the end of summer when it was hot as fuck. It was like
early September when we went.
Yeah. But, well, hopefully if we get to go again, it'll be cooler, you know.
Yeah.
Cooler day.
I'm hoping so. But also for this week, it's a David episode this week. And then in 2 weeks, it'll be a Sarah-sode.
Yay.
Right after her 73rd birthday.
Which coincidentally is right before your 103rd.
Yeah, whatever. So with also that said, yes, there was not the episode of Wednesday like normal because what I'm covering today was also is the 60th anniversary, which is today being Friday. If you're listening later on, I'm going to be covering the Palm Sunday tornadoes that happened in our area. It's something I've wanted to do since we started, but I've noticed the calendar. I'm like, hey, 2025 will be an anniversary year, so I'm going to push this off.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't think about it being in the area where it happened. I should have put, you know, out there with their email to be like, hey,
we
would like to talk to some people in our area about this. We can come to you and record it or probably whatever.
Months in advance, yeah, we should have done that.
Didn't think about doing it until it was like too late.
Mm-hmm.
With that being said, let's get started. It's Palm Sunday, 1965. You just returned home from Sunday service and it's a warm spring day. It's the first warm spring day after the harsh Indiana winters. And not wanting to spend one more day cooped up, you head outside. You slightly grin due to the warm sun beaming down on your face as you stretch out on the lawn chair. You listen to the birds chirp and the sounds of the neighborhood kids playing and laughing. You may also smell a barbecue being lit and think what a wonderful day this is. but this all changes in an instant. The birds stop singing and the temperature starts to drop and the wind picks up. You open your eyes to find that the bright blue sky has turned an eerie pea green and the raindrops start to land on your body. Not wanting to get soaked from the coming rain, you rush inside only to find out that there's a tornado warning in your area. Even though these tornadoes hit a tri-state area of Michigan, Ohio, and Indiana, I'm wanting to focus more on the ones that hit close to home, so to speak, here in Elkhart County. And why I'm wanting to look specifically at this, more than half of the fatalities of this tornado outbreak happened here in our county. The full total of fatalities from the Palm Sunday tornado of 1965 is 137.
Is that just from this county?
No, that is in total. All three states of Michigan, okay. Indiana, and Ohio. And there's also major changes that happened from with the National Weather Service, how people are warned about that, all just because of what happened here in our county, it having the highest death toll. So what causes a tornado, do you know?
Weather conditions.
Weather conditions.
Is it like when the cold weather hits the warm weather?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So by definition, from the National Weather Service, is a violently rotating column of air touching the ground and is usually attached to the base of a thunderstorm. What tornadoes need to form is warm, moist air near the ground with cooler, dry air aloft or in the air. And wind shear, which is a change in speed, wind speed or direction with some height. All thunderstorms have a potential to produce tornadoes, but supercell thunderstorms have a higher probability to produce them. Supercell storms are like regular thunderstorms, but with a persistent rotating updraft in its core. As they grow in size, the vortex from the rotating updraft begins to tilt to one side, pulling in the warm, wet air from the ground and forcing the cooler, dry air at the top down to the ground. The water vapor from the warm air being pulled up from the ground is causing the vortex to swell, creating the funnel cloud that is forced down to the ground with the colder air. The cooler downdraft of the cold air fights the warmer updraft in the spiral and causes the speed to increase. With enough pressure and weight from the downdraft, the warm and cool air are battling over the rotation of the cloud and is forced to the ground and a tornado is formed. With a little bit more of an understanding how that happened, we're going to talk, now we'll actually get into talking about the tornadoes.
Okay.
So starting actually in April 10th, the Saturday before, a low pressure front moved across the central United States, drawing in warm, moist air from the Gulf of Mexico, but also warm, dry air from the southwestern states as it moved northeast. So what this does is also creates a cap of sorts in the atmosphere, not allowing clouds to be formed and making the atmosphere unstable to create thunderstorms like the ones we've seen here last week. They said that if the sun comes out, it's going to create the atmosphere to be unstable, and there's possible more severe weather than what we saw that day, and that's what we had seen in areas near us.
Yeah.
And at the time we recorded this, it's like 40 degrees outside, and it's snowing, so thankfully the history is not repeating itself anytime soon in the next 48 hours or anything.
Yeah, hopefully.
Meteorologists in Kansas City had noticed that all the ingredients are there for a supercell outbreak is possible, and it's issued a severe thunderstorm warning for northern Illinois, eastern Iowa, and southern Wisconsin. I should have just went with it and let Minnie just fucking jump by shit and
southern Wisconsin.
Should have just went with Wisconsin or whatever. Soon after this severe thunderstorm warning was issued. Soon after this warning was issued, a jet streak overtakes the cold front and then taking the cap off that's been holding down all the instability in the atmosphere, allowing the supercell to form. The high temperature for April 11th in our area was 72 degrees, whereas the average was 60 degrees, so it's like 12 degrees over normal average. So yeah, and you've been here long enough now that when that first like warm day hits here is different than it did, you know, up in Michigan where you're from. Everybody's outside.
Yep.
The first tornado that formed out of the supercell that would come across the area that we live in struck at 3:27 p.m. in Lakewood, Illinois, lasting only about 8 minutes, killing 6 people and injuring 75 before the supercell moved east into our area. Even though more communities were damaged or destroyed entirely by the supercell in our area, the path of destruction started near Coons Lake in St. Joe County, Indiana, where John Fruck remembered seeing the black funnel come across the lake and turn white as soon as it hit the water as it dragged north and destroyed 100 cottages around the lake. I couldn't find if there was any fatalities from when it hit Coons Lake. Mm-hmm. From there, it tracked through south of South Bend, Mishawaka, They did take some storm damage, but not nearly this. It did hit the Shipshawana area we've gone through many times. It hit Wakarusa area many times, but I'm wanting to focus mostly on our area. Like, these tornadoes in between Coons Lake and where we are, it basically obliterated entire towns because of the tornadoes that came through. Roughly around somewhere between 6 and 6:30, it varied from the sources I use. The tornadoes from the supercell struck the area that we're in now. Well, like I said at the beginning of this, I wanted to focus on survivor stories and whatnot from our area because our area was the hardest hit, and I will reveal the fatality count and all that here at the end of it. The same tornado that hit Coons Lake would finally reemerge just north of Goshen, Indiana, and travel through an area known as Dunlap. The biggest part, one of the first areas that this tornado would hit would be the Midway Trailer Park in Dunlap. Survivor Dave Hatch shared a story from what his parents told him because he was only 2 years old at the time. I wasn't yet 2 years old when my parents and I were tossed out of our trailer by one of those pairs. I always thought that the picture was of the pair over Dunlap. My parents told me about watching it go by after crawling out of the wreckage at Midway. We were in the middle of the park and only got rolled over. Some of our friends lost their trailer on the back row while they were out moving, while they were out of town. We were building a house just south of town, and my dad was kicking himself for not moving the trailer out there. It was many years before I could enjoy the green skies and the emergency broadcast signal. Her story makes this picture much more personal. I remember the Arab sign, but I thought it was closer to Green Road. My folks have a notebook full of photos from a newspaper photographer, but I don't remember who that was. So if you were to Google search Palm Sunday tornado, one image is going to come up more than any other photo from this day. And that would be the dual funnel photograph that is crossing U.S. Highway 33 like a pair of black legs. And this photo was taken by photographer Paul Huffman. His wife, Elizabeth, said he never went anywhere without his camera. Paul and his wife, Elizabeth, were traveling down U.S. 33 in Dunlap. And his wife said to him, "Look at that smoke. Is that something burning?" Paul, who had witnessed tornadoes before, told her, "It's not smoke." Paul would end up pulling his car off to the side of the road, grabbing his camera, hooking his leg around the front bumper of their car to steady himself in the wind, and taking 6 photographs tracking the F4 tornado as it crossed U.S. 33, and it would split into two for a brief moment, and it destroyed 80% of the Midway trailer park, killing 10 people, for continuing on and merging back into one on its track on the northeast side of U.S. 33. At the time, Paul didn't know he had photographed the twin tornadoes as he only saw the right funnel in his viewfinder of his camera. Some of the videos out there claim Paul had heard about the tornado warnings, which isn't true. He was outside working that day in the sunshine, and just since bad weather was on its way. His wife, Elizabeth, recounted that she didn't even see her husband, Paul, for days as he was taking photos and helping out others. And Paul also was a World War II veteran in the Navy, and he was attached to a petroleum bomber unit. So I thought it was fitting that we share that with everybody. That's probably why that man was able to go out there and, like, just take snap picture after picture, because he served in the Pacific Theater, which was some areas of the Pacific Theater were a lot worse than the European Theater.
Yeah. So, okay, question, because I've seen the picture that you are referencing.
Right.
So it didn't come here, like, in this area as two moving units.
No.
It was one unit that split into two tornadoes then rejoined.
They weren't always two tornadoes. That's, like, been a common myth thing. Like, I didn't realize that either until I started looking into this, and then I saw from the public library had uploaded, scans of his pictures to where from when his wife saw the tornado, and then he started taking the 6 pictures of it coming out of the clouds onto the ground, and then only seeing the right funnel cloud in the picture where it's split, and then it goes back together after it crosses over the railroad tracks, the highway, and everything else.
So is this spot the only spot that had the twin tornadoes at the time?
I'm sure there's more that's happened, but this is also considered the first documented case of twin tornadoes like that. As these storms tracked northeast, they would continue to devastate the southern area of Elkhart, Indiana, destroying a church and multiple homes in the Sunnyside area, killing an additional 36 people and injuring 321. And a survivor story from Pam, Oregon, that was in this area, the Sunnyside area, I figured out from her story. "I was 16 years old, dating a guy who was 18. He had a convertible, and we had the top down, riding around. It was a beautiful day. Then it got dark, and we headed to my house, just north of Hively in Elkhart. We started hearing the sirens. Being curious as we drove on South Main Street, police stopped us but wouldn't tell us what happened. They directed us over the tracks towards Sunnyside. Just as we got over the tracks, a second tornado came through. It picked up the front of the car and eventually turned us around. I remember laying on the floor of the car and seeing the power poles dancing in the air like a cartoon and then being slammed back into the ground at weird angles. Then it was completely still and silent except for the sound of cows mooing and a woman crying. She was running barefoot, carrying a child. We tried to pick her up, but she was in shock. Eventually, we made our way to another railroad crossing, and the officer there told us power lines were down everywhere, not to touch anything metal in the car, and to coast over the tracks and go north. When I got home, my mom was in the basement looking out the window well. She said she could tell by looking at me I had been in it. I wanted to go somewhere to volunteer, but she insisted I stayed home.
Dang.
Elkhart County Sheriff Woody Canton shared, "I saw the worst mess I had ever seen, and I went through the South Pacific during World War II. You can't see anywhere where the streets were. Everything was level. People were coming out of the basements, and they were staggering towards me. They had blood and dirt on their faces and couldn't see." These storms would continue the track north, northeast, through Ohio and Michigan, and finally dissipating over Tecumseh, Michigan and Strongsville, Ohio. The Palm Sunday tornadoes is still one of the most deadly tornado outbreaks across the three states, and a total of 55 tornadoes would spawn in a total of 40 hours. They would also cause 266 fatalities and over 3,600 injuries. Total property damage would be $1.2 billion in 1965, equaling $12 billion today in 2025. It's believed that many people had missed the warnings due to being in church service in the earlier part of the day, being Palm Sunday, the Sunday before two Sundays before Easter.
Mm-hmm.
And following the cleanup, President Lyndon B. Johnson would arrive and survey the damage himself on April 14th and was heard more than once just saying awful. It's just awful when he asked his thoughts about when he saw the damage. In one of the photos of Lyndon B. Johnson visiting the area, he's addressing a crowd on top of a pile of rubble, assistance from the government, and, you know, to lift their spirits. And soon after that, the last known survivor would be found under that same pile of rubble.
Oh, my God.
And I've seen original prints of that photograph at the fire station because they have a couple different frames that I remember. Right, I showed you those pictures.
You probably did.
But I know it's been so long since we've been in there yet. Mm-hmm. I've seen those. One of the stories... When we had our 60th anniversary for the fire station, when I was still a member there, I talked to some of the original members. The one story from that stuck out from him telling me is that there was like a pet store down in this area,
mm-hmm.
and that they were having to go chase like the little monkeys that people keep out of pets. Like they would see them in trees and whatnot.
No shit.
Mm-hmm. And little monkeys in the trees here in our area.
That'd be wild.
Mm-hmm. It was like, oh, it's like Jumanji in the 60s almost. So when I was looking this up, I did ask my dad about if the tornadoes came through the town that he grew up in, which is a small farming town, which like a lot of these got destroyed, were destroyed. He didn't tell me how old he was, but I'm going to guess he was probably just going to be in his teens or in his early teens when it happened. He did tell me that he was at a youth fellowship at the church that his entire family attended.
Mm-hmm.
The pastor's daughter came in and told them that Midway Dunlap had been hit hard by a tornado, and he doesn't remember going home after that, but they might have more likely stayed at the church until the storm had passed. He does remember that the power was off by then, and that it wasn't that big of a deal, as the power grid at the time was pretty bad at the time, because it's a small town.
Especially out there, yeah.
Yeah. And also it's a Midwest sun, it's thunderstorm season in the Midwest, and it's like, oh, power's off because of a storm.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, they didn't have the internet or TV, just the portable radios, and he had like a crystal transistor radio, so he didn't need to have batteries for it to pick up radio signals. He said that my grandmother, his mother, had set out hamburger for their school lunches the next day, and of course school was canceled because of the storms, and that she more than likely took the meat to the hospital because their power being out, so it wouldn't go bad, so they could use it there for whatever reason, because they knew they were going to get an influx of people.
Yep.
Even for that area, because it went also through the Middlebury area, and from where Middlebury is, LaGrange is the next closest hospital before going into Sturgis, Michigan.
Right.
And he doesn't remember if his sister went, but he also did say that his mother drove a Red Cross van to take food to the workers cleaning up debris in the fields, and that him and his dad, my grandfather, would also go out and help farmers clean out their fields and do the spring planting as well.
Yeah.
He just remembered that the weather being in LaGrange was just cold and damp and rainy, just like it has been here recently.
Like it is today.
Like it is today.
Yeah.
My niece's late grandmother that they never got to meet.
Maternal grandmother.
Their maternal grandmother that they never got to meet from their mother's side. Her mom has a chess piece. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
So my niece's mother has a chess piece from her mom that was in her hand when they were told to take shelter from because of the thunderstorms today. Because, like, they were told to run to the basement. It was in her hand. She just got up and ran to the basement. Some of the other things I did hear that, like, they, because of the body counts, the school, middle school that I went to also, they had to turn it into a temporary morgue because of the bodies, the body count that was in our area.
I bet.
And that's probably why I always felt weird in that building when I was attended there. Like, certain areas, like, you know how, like, they only keep certain lights on to keep power down, but to keep hallways lit. Uh-huh. So it looks creepy enough as it is. But just walking through certain areas of that building, it just felt
off. Didn't feel right.
And now finding that out is probably, oh, that explains a whole lot of being in that building. Even the lights on and being there during the day is weird.
No, thank you, sir. No, thank you.
Right.
But at least you have maybe an explanation as to why you felt that way going to
the school. Yep, I just want to get in there after dark. I got stuff. Can I come in?
I got new toys to play with.
Right.
Can I come in and talk to you?
Yep. So what changes happened with that came after the tornado?
Mm-hmm.
Before 1970, there wasn't a scale to measure tornado damage like there is today. Scientist Tetsuya Theodore Fujita. Does that kind of sound familiar?
Say it again.
Tetsuya Theodore Fujita would actually spend the next 5 years developing the Fujita scale to measure tornado intensity and the possible damage that could be caused after he visited our area to study the affected areas of the Palm Sunday tornadoes.
Would that be why it's EF?
It was the Fujita scale before EF.
Okay. Ding, ding, ding. I figured it out. I win.
He chartered multiple flights by airplane, helicopters to survey damage overhead and compiled the Fujita or F scale that is still used today in most countries. Here in the United States, it was decommissioned in 2007 to be the enhanced Fujita scale, which I honestly didn't see any difference with it. I'm sure that there is, but
it's probably so minuscule it wouldn't matter.
Before the supercell outbreak in 1965, there wasn't a radar station between Illinois and Ohio. So, like, in some of the black and white footage I showed of, like, drawn, like, printed off maps and whatnot, it just shows Indiana with, like, nothing in between.
Uh-huh.
Other than weather spotters from Sheriff's Department reporting stuff out or whatnot. So, like, they could talk to a weather office in Fort Wayne. But, like, weather radar, there was nothing in northern Indiana at the
time. That's a big space.
Right.
To have nothing.
Mm-hmm. So because of the supercell outbreak of tornadoes on Palm Sunday, a radar station now has been installed in South Bend, Indiana to fill in the gap in between. And this would also bring along the terms tornado warning and tornado watch in 1966.
It's like the taco watch taco warning.
Like, that is the easiest. I know it's a joke. It's a meme kind of thing, but it's literally the easiest way to understand the difference between a tornado watch and a tornado warning. So for those that might not see what we're talking about, a taco watch would have
your sour cream, your cheese, your lettuce, your meat, your shell, all the components to make a taco.
Right.
Your taco warning
is when there's an actual taco.
A fully made taco.
Yep.
So, yeah. Tornado warning or tornado watch. All the components are there that a tornado could happen.
Yep.
Tornado warning. Motherfucker's going to happen.
Yep. But with where we live, the problem with that is like when there is a tornado watch or warning, they set the sirens off. It sets them off for the entire county, not just in a specific area.
Yeah.
So when the tour sirens go off, we literally have to see and listen to where they are saying that it is at.
Yeah, they need to fix that shit. Because that, was it last week?
Yeah, it was like last week with all those sirens.
Terrifying.
Yeah. Even knowing it wasn't in our area, but still knowing why the tornado siren was going off. So you've heard of the civil defense and the sirens that they had was mostly for like air raid warnings and whatnot from like the this being in the middle of the Cold War and whatnot. Yeah. Those sirens also would be used now also after the supercell outbreak to warn those that are outside that there's impending danger coming.
Take your ass inside.
In more recent times, severe weather preparedness week started to take place across the United States to make people more weather aware. And usually every day is a different focus. So like there's one day there's thunderstorms, severe thunderstorms, mm-hmm. tornadoes, and flooding. Like one day of the week is a focus with the National Weather Service on those. And there's not a set week. Like ours has already happened here, and that was like in the early part of March before we entered tornado season. So like, you know, most things out of tragedy and the things that I cover, like Bath Township, something really nice comes out of it as well.
Mm-hmm.
So over just off County Road 45, there is a small memorial park where the childhood home of survivor Debbie Waters once stood, where in her neighborhood, 28 people were killed. She also has said in some of the other videos that I watched, survivors that have visited this park have come to peace with their survivor's guilt after visiting this memorial park. I know where it's at. I've seen it. You can see it off the road. I know where it is exactly if you ever want to stop it and go see it.
County Road 45, where's that?
County Road 45 is the road that you take to go to your best friend's house.
Oh, 45. Okay. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's County Road. Okay. Duh.
Yeah. It's the road that you take to go to your best friend's house.
Yeah.
So I do have some tornado fun facts.
Are there really fun facts about tornadoes?
Yeah, there's nothing really. It's only three of them. It's
okay.
Because of me being sick the previous weekend.
Yeah.
I didn't look into it and then getting back to work and then coming home and sleeping mostly afterwards because being exhausted, still recovering. Yeah. I didn't get many put in here. So it's only have three this week.
It's okay.
Tornadoes do not only happen in the United States like I first believed. I always believe that, you know, that they only happen in the United States, not just because it's not, this isn't an instance of, oh, chocolate milk comes from brown cows kind of stupid thinking. And this is not like old information I had read thinking is like, oh, they only happen in the United States. No, they don't. They only happen more frequent in the United States than other countries. Around 1,200 tornadoes happen each year in the United States. The deadliest tornado on record happened in Bangladesh on April 26, 1989, killing an estimated 1,300 people.
Holy shit.
Yeah. And, like, there's been tornadoes that have crossed Lake Michigan. There's tornadoes that have crossed across, you know, the Smoky Mountains, the Appalachian Mountains, whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they happen anywhere, like most people believe. Like, a lot of myths are, it's like, open your windows to keep your house from exploding from the pressure change.
Yeah, no, don't do that.
That's been debunked. Hiding under overpass has been debunked. Hiding in the southeast corner has been debunked because most tornado tracks move from south to north, which is not true either. They can change direction at any time. Like the twins, as they're known as, it's been reported as that the one that they would rotate around each other. So that doesn't matter.
Do we know why they split begin with?
I'm sure it's in the Fujita papers, but I looked through the
Fujita. No reason's ever been found.
It could have been explained farther in the Fujita papers, but I looked in his papers, which you can find online for free if you would like. If you want to read his whole report, I looked specifically for the parts that he talked about our area.
Okay.
So it could have been mentioned in a whole other part, but it was not from in the sections of it that I read.
Okay. I was just curious.
Right. So the tornado in the Wizard of Oz was actually a 35-foot-long canvas sock over a rotating rod with dirt being pumped through it to make it look more realistic and was filmed separately, which was later on replayed on the background to finish the effect of the tornado hitting Dorothy's farm while she's acting out the scene of trying to get in the tornado shelter.
Pretty good effect for back then.
Yeah.
Never would have known that was a sock.
Well, I didn't know how else to word it. I mean, it was a giant sock over top of this metal rod on a little cart. So it moved back and forth the way that it did. And then they pumped dirt and debris through the middle of it. So it kind of pushed out the outside to make it look more effective.
It was effective.
So, yeah, I mean, for the effects of the Wizard of Oz at that time, it was a pretty big deal. Who knows? Maybe that should be an episode for me to look into of some sorts.
All the weird shit that was in the Wizard of Oz. The
Weird of Oz.
All the little myths and
urban legends, like the body swinging in the background.
Yep.
Stuff like that, maybe.
Yeah.
That'd be a little bit more of a fun episode than doom and gloom stuff that we normally get to. Also the conspiracy theory, the first conspiracy theory I might be bringing up.
Before we go into all that, let's stick on the tornadoes. Blondie had asked when we were a lot younger, what would happen if she stuck her finger in a tornado? What do you think would happen?
Well, this is what she thinks would happen?
No, what do you think would happen if you legitimately tried to just stick your finger in a tornado.
Well, first of all, you're not going to be on your feet if you're that close to stick your finger in a tornado. You're going to be in the tornado whole body.
And there you have it, Michelle. You will be sucked up.
How old was she when she asked this question?
I don't remember. I just remember it being a running joke for a long time. What would happen if you stuck your finger in a tornado?
Well, first of all, you're not going to be on your feet. You're going to be inside of it real quick. The hell?
You're going to get the swirlies. Yep. That was the only tornado-related anything I had.
Right. Well, they're not that really a common place where you're from in Michigan, so.
They're more common than you think.
Right. Like, not like how you've heard about them down here since you've been down here.
No. I've definitely had more fear of tornadoes being down here.
Right.
Yeah. But, yeah.
Considering how close proximity we are to where that photograph was taken.
Yeah, real close. Basically out our back door.
But also, there's, you know, the local urban legend of the dome that's happened since then. If you watch on radar.
Oh, I do. And I've noticed it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what I'm speaking of is, like, the area that we're in, there's this urban legend after the tornadoes that came through this area. There's this dome that has now formed over this area to protect the area from tornadoes hitting it again. And the legend is, if you watch the radar at a close enough level over the Dunlap area, you can see the storm split around the marked area of Dunlap and then come back together again on the opposite side.
Yeah.
And allegedly that was never a thing until after the tornadoes.
Well, but a lot of storms that we have like a 100% chance of it hitting us always misses us.
Yeah, right.
And like all the times that we've gotten tornado sirens, it's like an EF0 has hit like right by where we used to live and has destroyed a lot of property and trees down that street.
Right.
And we don't see shit here. That's not that far.
I know.
So, it's real close to home.
I know. But I'm sure you also watch me also to see how I'm acting and behaving about when it happens, too.
Yeah. Well, when you go in and put your clothes back on, not that you're sitting around naked, but, like, you go and put your pants and your shoes and all that back on, like, the cat carriers come out. Like, that's when I get nervous is when you put
why I'm doing that is save time. Because worst case scenario, I don't want to be in pajama pants if, you know, something like in a weather event like that happens. I want to have something more durable on in case there is debris that I have to push and climb out through.
Right.
Because, you know, splintered wood, splintered drywall, or whatever is going to just tear through pajama pants. I want durable denim jeans on for that kind of thing.
Right.
It's not me being super nervous. It's me. It's my time from the fire service of quote unquote going ugly early and being prepared.
Right. But it still makes me nervous that you're going that extra step because you think it may be needed.
It's not it may be needed. It's me. I'm wanting to be ready just in case.
Right.
And it's not something to make you worried. I just want to have it done and out of the way.
I know, but then you go and put your jeans and your shoes and shit on, and then I feel like I have to put a fucking bra back on, and that is irritating.
Well, if it was a situation like we talked about now, the bra's going to be the last thing on your mind anyway.
Oh, yeah. It'll be grabbing my bag of mom stuff and the cats and getting out.
Right.
Be most important to me.
I know some things have sentimental value, but getting you and the cats out is the more important thing to me.
I know.
But anyhow, with all that said, I think it's time we close up the Emporium for the day, Sarah. What do you think?
I agree.
So until next time.
Keep your feet on the ground and creep it real.
And stay spooky.
Join our Facebook group by searching Macabre Emporium. Like and subscribe on YouTube at Macabre Emporium Podcast. Follow us on TikTok at Macabre Emporium Pod. Follow us on Twitter at Macabre Emporium. If you have any stories of the paranormal, your local true crime, or weird history that you would like us to look into and possibly do an episode on, email us at macabreemporiumpod@gmail.com. And remember to follow, rate, review, and share whenever and wherever you can to help us grow our podcast.